Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. Musical instruments, like cars, need regular tune-ups. Any musician who is making a living at it knows if they ignore this regular maintenance, they do it at their musical peril. But sometimes instruments need more than the equivalent of an oil change and a tire rotation. Whether through accident or neglect, sometimes instruments need to be completely overhauled or rebuilt to make them gig-worthy once again. People who can do this kind of delicate, painstaking work are well worth their weight in gold. In the heart of an unassuming corner of River West sits Denny Rowan Guitars. Rowan, himself an accomplished guitarist, has designed and built guitars and basses and run the factories that produce them. But in 1983, he officially opened his first luthier shop, repairing and restoring mostly guitars and basses. 30 years later, Rowan Guitars is known around the world as a place that will not only fix your instrument, but make it play and sound the best it possibly can. Musicians like the Rolling Stones' Keith Richards and Martin Barr from Jethro Tull come to Denny, as do many, many local players. Rowan joins me in the studio now. Denny, welcome to Lake Effect.
Well, it's a pleasure.
30 years. 30 years of being the guitar whisperer, which is my name for you. I don't know that anyone else has that name for you.
Oh, I've heard them all.
Yeah.
It's been, 30 years. It's just hard to imagine that I've been doing this that long, because I love doing it as much today as I did the day I started.
Now, you had been working as a designer, an instrument designer, and doing some repair, but mostly design and building. What got you into the repair side? Why did you decide to start doing that?
Well, actually, I was originally designer and the production manager for two manufacturers in Chicago area, one of them being Dean Guitars, the other one SD Curley. And I did everything. I mean, I ran the factory and designed the guitars. It's very interesting work, but you're not actually dealing directly with players. And after a while, I came to realize, I think this is more of a fashion show than making great instruments. And I, being a player myself, I like that connection with the instrument and the person. It's just the next level when you're really making the instrument do something very specific. And you're not doing that manufacturing. You're doing a fashion show, which at Dean Guitars, we actually did fashion shows at the NAMM show, to produce or to show our guitars off. So,
well, I would imagine in production, part of the issue is that you're mass producing something. You're not doing individual hand-built or bespoke instruments per person. You're doing something that you hope will appeal to a lot of people.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I didn't fight that. That's what that job's all about. And I realized that didn't really interest me that much. And so I started the business doing repair work and restoration. And actually, 30 years ago, I mostly custom-built guitars initially. I had my name in the manufacturing because I had designed the Dean Baby guitar and I had designed the Liberty Bass for SD Curley. And so I went with that and I stuck with just building guitars initially, but slowly started to move into restoration and repair and modifications. Because then you're dealing directly, once again, with the player and the magic that happens when a player plays an instrument, and how does it do that, and how do you make that string sound exactly a certain way or feel a certain way, because that's all important. And slowly I move towards becoming more into restoration because it's more interesting. Believe it or not, taking these things apart and putting them back together and bringing them up to maybe standards of today's players, some of the instruments maybe weren't quite up to that, is a real challenge. Every single one of them is completely different. It's a lot different than manufacturing or building an instrument, because you're working with something that already exists and some other person put their time into it. And so you're trying with respect to honor that, at the same time, do what it needs to be done to bring it up to speed for the player.
So when you started doing this, obviously you had some skills in building because you had been doing that, whether it was on your own or in manufacturing. Did you just sort of train yourself in the restoration and the repair, or were there people that you went to and said, how do I do this?
Well, I am one of those self-taught people.
You're a tinkerer.
I am. Even in manufacturing, I didn't have anybody teach me. I kind of came into a company on the floor level sanding, and within a year and a half, I was running the factory just because, maybe I have some innate ability that's there, that I'm able to look at things and make them work better, whatever. It's worked in my advantage over the years, but I am a self-taught person, which in a large way is learning everything in reverse. I don't recommend it to anybody, but it does allow for a lot of creativity. And as long as you have zero boundaries, it could work out for you.
Zero boundaries in what sense?
In the sense that you really don't know what you're doing, and so you don't have any gates up that say, you can't do that because that says so in the book or whatever. I didn't have a book. So I think I invented the compound radius, or as I call it at the time, the multi-radius fingerboard, because I didn't know better. players came to me and they had a problem and trying to bend notes yet keep the action really low like they could on their Les Paul. And it was a no-brainer for me. I think I figured it out in one night's sleep, you know, and woke up the next day. I think I have the answer to this. And said, I think it's a cone shape.
And so what we're talking about is that's a part of the fretboard, right?
Right. That is the fretboard, right? The
okay.
top part.
So this is where actually, for people who aren't guitar players, this is where you're actually fretting the notes. And what does this radius do? And this is for bending notes on an electric?
You could use it on acoustic as well. You don't tend to play with action that light on an acoustic guitar, so it's really not, it doesn't come into play there. But on electric guitar, the kind of things people are playing, they're playing with such a light action that if the radius is too small, they go to bend a note up the neck and it just disappears.
Oh, it stops sounding.
Right.
Okay.
Because it hits the fingerboard, it hits the frets. So by changing the radius slightly, it flattens it a little bit, gives a little bit more clearance. It's really a minute thing, but it makes all the difference in the world to a player, and it's a big thing there. And
is everyone using this now?
It's pretty popular. It's out there all over the world. I know there are guitar companies all over doing it and using it. And I decided to share it many years ago when I came up with it, was using it on my own guitars for a number of years, and then had to make a decision. I had been looking into patenting it and going through all that, but it was over my head as far as costs and other things. And plus, it started to own my life. And I do a lot more than just one thing. And I decided, you know what? This industry, the luthier industry from, you know, 200 years ago when it began, people have shared. That's how things have gotten better for the most part. It's not been an area where luthiers aren't known for being wealthy. I don't know any wealthy ones, actually. I don't think there are any. And that's because a lot of this kind of information that's, you know, all the stuff I got, well, I taught myself, but I did it through books and through trial and error, but a lot of books. This process of sharing is so important to the music industry because the people that we're dealing with in general, we're talking musicians, and I think those are the last people on the planet you can expect to have any money. So,
well, there are some.
There are some, yeah. But it's very few. And I'm, you know, fortunate enough to be able to work with those ones too, and it's wonderful, but just the idea that you're going to keep an idea to yourself, it's not going to go well. And then if you want to go ahead and patent it and chase that around, you have to chase it around the world, not just in your own country. And, you know, for guys running a little one-man shop, which I was at the time, and raising two children by myself, that just didn't interest me. What really interested me was sharing it. So to this day, there is no patent on it, and yet people use it everywhere. And that's the other part. I'm so glad that everybody can use it. It's not one company and everyone has to pay them some royalty fee. Everyone uses it for free.
So 30 years ago, you had been doing some stuff beforehand, but you opened your first shop. And that wasn't here, though.
That was in Chicago.
It was in Chicago. So tell me a little bit about that. You had been working for Dean, and then you decided to make a change.
Yeah, I made the decision that I think the second or third time we had the Playboy Bunnies coming into the shop and I'm building special apparatuses for them to hold our guitars for advertising. I thought, you know, this is all great, but, you know, this doesn't have anything to do with guitar building. The paint job's really important, and that's great, but we were getting away from what really matters to a player, and so I decided this is time for me to go do my own thing.
And so it was an old garage, right?
Old gas station.
Yeah.
I converted an old gas station. Thanks to Herman and Wanda Spurdy, two of the most fabulous people on the planet, who nicely let me rent the place.
So what brought you here? What brought you to Milwaukee? Because you've actually, the majority of your work has been done here.
Yes, it has, because it's 30 years. I was in Chicago area for about five. Well, after that period, I had, you know, built enough of a reputation nationally and whatnot that I realized I could be wherever I wanted to be. I thought, well, I love Chicago area. It's really nice, but it's very hard to operate in, especially with two children. So the music scene in Milwaukee has always been great. I knew that because of the clientele I had from there. I actually looked at three places. I looked at here. I looked at Minneapolis. And I had an offer to open a shop in Hollywood, California. Well, I just said, you know what? Milwaukee's the place that's going to really work for me. It's going to be a place that's really going to be livable. I do a lot of outdoors things as well as, you know, music and you know what? It's worked out fantastic. I had bought the building, which took me 10 years to find the right building because I'd been looking for one in River West. But with some help from Paul Drecke, an old person who used to work with me, I found the place and put the shop there. And a few years after I got it, my daughter graduated from high school and said, hey, time to move into River West.
Well, I have to say, having visited your shop any number of times, it's also a fantastic place because it is deceptively small. You walk into the first part and you don't realize how far back it goes and what kinds of different rooms you have for different things, because you're doing everything from paint and varnish to, as you say, the repair to, you know, adjusting whatever needs to be adjusted on all these various instruments. And you also now are paying it forward a certain amount because you actually have people working for you and you're training them.
Right, yes. Yeah, Matt Reby, who's there now, is just phenomenal talent.
And he's a UWM grad, isn't
he? He's a UWM grad in music and not only a great luthier, he's a great player, which I think the two, you need to have both ingredients to really do well in this business, because you have to understand those intricate things that are going on with a player, and Match certainly does that.
It seems that just looking from the outside that there's maybe a resurgence of interest. Maybe there's always been a certain group of people that have been interested in learning instruments, but there seems to be a resurgence or maybe an increase of people that want to play the guitar, want to play the bass. And it's not just so much to be in a rock band. I mean, everybody's got that sort of rock band fantasy, I think, when you're a high schooler. But it's beyond that, that there are adults coming to this and that there seem to be more and more people wanting to play. I mean, I don't know. Is that a fair assumption, or is that just something because I'm sort of skewed towards being interested and I'm seeing more people because I'm interested?
Yeah, and you interview them all the time.
And I interview them all the time, exactly.
Yes, you have a great show with a lot of musical talent. I agree with you. I think it has. I think it's grown. Music touches some, it's some kind of magical new dimension or something. You know, you creates a feeling, and it's different with everyone, but when it relates to a lot, when you create a piece of music that relates to a lot of people, it's so special. And I think a lot of people want to be a part of that now. And there's so many opportunities with the internet and whatnot to learn to play different instruments, you know, and maybe that has something to do with that. I don't know, but I do think it's growing. It's not shrinking.
Do you think that people are also somehow more interested in acoustic instruments, that there has been a resurgence in that as well?
You know, you'll see a lot more people with acoustic instruments, but there's still plenty playing electric instruments. But that whole thing, maybe it was the late 70s or 80s. I remember the keyboards came out and they could sound just like a guitar and you could do all the different sounds. Guitar's going to go out of business. Whoever thought that didn't realize the connection. An instrument is a size, a length, a feel for a reason. It has a feeling that a player has when they're playing it. So you may be able to play the same notes on a keyboard, but you couldn't feel them the same way as you play them on a guitar. And you might use different tunings on a guitar, just strictly so that you can, it feels better. And the voicings are a little different, even though the notes are the same. Yeah, the voicings change a little bit. There's so many little things that make it magical.
And that's the word that I was thinking of, is that there's something about this that is magic. There's something about the connection that people have to music, you know, to art in general, but music in particular, that there's that sort of element of magic. And every musician I've ever talked to, eyes light up when you kind of say, oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's special, and you know it. And when you can write that piece of music, I had a piece I wrote many years ago that my son and I recorded when he was 15 called Sunday Picnic. And it's one of my favorite tunes still to this day. It came together, the pieces came together, and it reminded me of those Sundays back when I was a kid when nobody worked. Everybody was off. And so when I play the piece, it still seems to feel like that. And I don't know if that's what other people are thinking when they hear it, but I know it connects somehow. And that special connection is the magic. It's probably the only real magic that we have. You know, it's like this is something that we can't really explain. But people know that they heard a song somewhere or a piece of music somewhere and it did something to them and they don't know why.
Or what.
Or what. But it was, and most of the time it's really good.
Well, 30 years on, and you're showing no signs of slowing down here. People are still bringing you instruments. You've got a very busy work schedule. What do you think is the future of the luthier business? I mean, do you think that people like you are going to continue to have plenty of work, or are you thinking that eventually this is going to be taken over by machines?
I don't think the machines can take it over. There are some interesting machines out there doing aspects of luthery work and CNC machines and whatnot. But when you get down to there's even things that work on the frets now, special machines. And we always kid around, we get some of those guitars in that have just been on one of those machines and they don't even come close to our standards. There's some connection you have to make with the instrument and at a different level that machines probably won't ever be able to quite do. One of the things that happens with the shop, and I still do to this day, is a conversation with the person playing. Whether it's one of my clients has a couple little kids that they just brought in and we talk about what they're trying to do, or it's somebody who's been, you know, Pierre Ben Suzanne, and we're trying to figure out what he's trying to do. That conversation is so important, and I don't know how you're going to have that with the machine. That's where you figure out, that's what I need to do. This is, I know what you want to have this instrument do. And so, that's when I transfer my knowledge of playing and building and add it to them. And probably has a lot to do, more to do with my success than anything else, is just that connection and that conversation.
Well, Denny, here's to many, many more years of the Guitar Whisperer and great success. And congratulations on 30 great years so far.
Well, thanks for having me, Bonnie.
Denny Rowan is the proprietor of Rowan Guitars, located in Milwaukee's River West neighborhood. He's celebrating 30 years of business this month. When he's not working on or playing guitars, he relaxes by playing the Highland bagpipes. We're hearing him now recorded in his shop. We'll take a break now, and then we're back with Tales from the Wheel, a wheel of cheese, that is. Stay tuned. It's Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.